and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're talking about the final part of the government's announcements, which happened just at the start of this week, Tuesday, the 23rd of March it was. And there are two additional changes I want to talk about. First, we're going to talk about the changes for first home buyers. And then we're going to talk about the infrastructure support that has been released, because that is particularly massive for property investors and certainly provides an opportunity for people who are involved in construction. It's going to be fantastic, especially for the economy. So the first change is around first-time buyers. And this whole idea behind these changes was to try and, quote, tilt the balance towards first-home buyers, because we've decided as a society, or the government's decided, that first-home ownership is incredibly important. We want to encourage more people into that. So, Andrew, what are the major changes that have occurred?
So what they've done is they've reviewed the limits in which you can qualify for one of the first-home loan grants. So the grant is the free money that you get from the government that you don't have to pay back. If you've been in KiwiSaver for 3 years, then you qualify for $3,000 up to $5,000, so $1,000 for every year per person. So if you're buying as a couple, that could be a maximum of $10,000 as a group. If you're buying a brand new property, that number doubles. So you get $2,000 for every year from 3 years to 5 years that you've been in KiwiSaver paying consecutive money into there. Now, the income caps, they've looked at these and said, actually, we can look to increase these now. So if you're buying as a couple, previously you've had to have no more than $130,000 as your previous year's income. Now that's increased to $150,000 as a couple. And if as an individual you're looking at it, it's gone from $85,000 to $95,000. Now, there's also a limit on the amount that you can pay on the property to qualify for this grant. So you've got to meet both criteria. In Auckland, previously the maximum you could spend on an existing property was $600,000. They've increased that to $625,000. I know it's not huge, but you can still buy something there for that. In Wellington, it's gone from $500,000 to $550,000, so that's a good increase. For a brand new property, because again, the government's trying to encourage people to go out and buy a brand new property, or at least consider it, they've taken it from $650,000 to $700,000 in Auckland and $550,000 to $650,000 in Wellington. So now you've actually got a broader range of properties that you can go and look at if you are an owner occupied and wanting or needing that first home buyer's grant.
Now, the impact of that is an extra 13,000 people are going to be eligible for this government-based support. So we're going to have more first home buyers in the market, particularly looking at new builds in this instance. And again, the reason behind that is they've increased the cap for existing properties by a little bit. In many cases, they've increased the cap, the price cap for new builds by a lot. So for instance, in Wellington, it's increased by $100,000. So we're going to see first home buyers out there saying, well, hey, I could spend more money. I can get a nicer house. I can get a house that I can post on Instagram if I go and buy a brand new build, as opposed to if I'm looking for something that's existing, so that I can qualify for that government support. The impact of that, again, is going to be that the market for new builds is going to heat up significantly, and we're going to see a lot of first-home buyers out there. Now, you might say, well, where have these numbers come from, though? How has the government decided that $700,000 is the right price for a new build in Auckland? And a lot of it has come from the CoreLogic data. So CoreLogic do have this data set that says, hey, here is the median price that first-home buyers are actually paying within the market, and that is being used to figure out what they should set the price cap at for house prices. So this is what first home buyers are actually paying in the market. You can get properties even in Auckland for $700,000. In Mangere Bridge, you might be able to get a two-bedroom brand new townhouse, something along those lines. In fact, I think we've seen three-bed, one-bath.
Some really good deals around that price, so I do think these are realistic figures.
But having said that, the market for underneath these price caps is going to again be extremely quick. And I remember even a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when we first launched Opus First Home back in the day, we were talking about even then the market was not particularly hot, but underneath those price caps, things moved extremely quickly because first home buyers were taking advantage of that government support, and there were a lot of them. Now, one of the big things for me around this, and I know I said this a couple of episodes ago as well, is that my read of this is because the government is saying, hey, look, first home buyers, use the first home loan to go out and buy a house with just a 5% deposit. And actually, your real deposit might only be 2.5% of the property's value. We'll give you free money through the first home grant for the other half of it. Go out and go and buy your first home with a 5% deposit. It means that the market cannot fall. They can't allow for it to fall at any amount, because it's going to then wipe out the equity that Bob and Sally down the road have just put into
their first-time buyers, Bob.
Well, I know what you mean. Now, you'd think that he'd be building his own home, old Bob, in that case. But the key thing there is, even if we see a very small drop in house values, that is going to wipe out Bob and Sally's equity within that property. And in fact, during the press conference when these were announced, there was recognition of that. The media were asking, well, do we expect to see house prices fall? They say, no, we're looking for a stabilization. We recognize that if Bob and Sally go and buy a property, this is going to be their largest asset. And we need to make sure that people aren't going to be going into negative equity because the price of the property drops or the value of the property drops. Their mortgage is now larger than the value of that property. And that would really harm first home buyers in that instance. So it's very much a double-edged sword for the government. What they're really hoping is that prices will flatline over time, or that houses will increase in value at a slower rate than the rise in incomes. And remember, in the past, we've said that that was around about 3.9% in many years, tracking along the lines very much in terms of rents. So that's what they're hoping for in that instance. But certainly the good news that I took from that side is, look, housing is now too big to fail. And of course, that was the phrase we used when the government was bailing out banks back in the 08 financial crisis, because the banks were considered that we couldn't let them fall over. Housing is getting to that point simply because the government is encouraging people to go out and purchase properties at very low deposit rates, first home buyers in this instance. Now, the other major change that was implemented is this massive fund that is going to be used to fund infrastructure, the development of infrastructure. It's called the Housing Acceleration Fund, and it is a multi-billion dollar fund which is going to be invested building infrastructure. So I'm talking water pipes, I'm talking about roads, I'm talking about street lamps, all of those things that aren't very sexy, but that local councils are struggling to fund in many instances. Now, why are local councils struggling to fund it? Because there are two ways that a local council can pay to have this sort of infrastructure developed. First of all, they can take on more debt. In many instances, that's not really an option because the likes of Auckland Council are so close to their debt ceiling. It is a self-imposed debt ceiling, I'll give you that, but they're so close to the maximum amount that they said they are willing to borrow, which I believe is something like 2.75 times revenue or rateable revenue in that instance. And there's so much debt, they can't borrow more in order to fund that infrastructure. Okay, let's move on to the second way that you can fund building this infrastructure, through rates increases. Oh. And we are seeing that right around the country already, where in some instances, we're talking about 12%. I think I even saw even higher levels than that in Wellington City in that instance. And ratepayers, i.e. homeowners, people who own property, always push back against this because you already own your own home. Why are you paying for new infrastructure to be developed, which is going to benefit people who are then going to purchase homes in that area? It's not going to necessarily impact you. And of course, we don't want to be paying more money, or most people don't want to be paying more money towards a government institution. Some people would rather see cuts in services as opposed to paying more tax in order to be able to fund that infrastructure. So usually councils are in a bit of a rock and a hard place. Government's going to come in here and say, hey, apply for some money and we will build infrastructure so that more land can be freed up for development. And I think this is going to be a really good thing that is going to help our COVID recovery in many ways, because the construction sector will get a real boost because there's going to be more land available for development.
And look, this is what we've been saying on the show for a while now. The problem in New Zealand is not the investor market. But yes, we've been targeted here. We've got to move on. The problem is supply. And if this helps put more product on the market, then that's going to really help. And let's face it, if some people who are motivated to buy their first home end up being able to do it through this, I think that's great as well, because it does provide stability in the market. And having an investment property mixed in with some owner-occupiers, that's a real positive thing as well, because people are house proud.
Now, you might also ask me, come on, Ed, how many houses are going to be built? Now, it is a large number that the government...
Same as Kiwi Belt.
It is around that mark, actually. The figure that Minister Megan Woods threw out at the press conference was 80,000 to 130,000 houses. Now, I do need a disclaimer at that and say it's over a 20-year period. So if you average that, if you say it's going to be 105,000 houses over a 20-year period, we're talking about just over 5,000 houses a year if you take those ballpark numbers and average it out. So that's going to be very, very welcome, especially as our population continues to increase, both because people want to move here, and then in addition, attention to that because we keep having babies and so our population keeps growing. So that is going to be very, very welcome in terms of helping to build out the supply. Now, some of that is going to come from developers building out homes themselves. So buying some land that is now available or contracting that from the government, building a house on it and then providing that to the market. So there is quite a difference between this and what was mooted through KiwiBuild in that instance. And I probably have quite a bit more confidence in here because it comes down to the fundamental issue of freeing up land so that it can be developable.
So I guess there are some silver linings to these announcements, not for property investors per se, other than the fact that we've probably got a bit of price stability out there. But look, at the end of the day, there are some positives out here.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you are interested in having a portfolio review, remember we are now introducing a service where you can sit down with Andrew and review your portfolio and see how these changes to tax and legislation are going to impact your specific portfolio, and we can go through how they're going to apply and perhaps some of the actions you need to take going forward in order to remain successful as a property investor. If you'd like to sign up for that, go to opuspartners.co.nz/review. I'm also going to drop a link to that in the show notes, so tap or swipe over the cover art, there'll be a link in there, or just go to opuspartners.co.nz, you'll be able to find it on the website. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.